How are we doing, everybody? I got a great guest on today. This is Anthony Kay, Sports Fluent. Now, I could tell you so many reasons why Anthony is a great guest, but Anthony, boss man, I'll hand you the floor. Give us an introduction, and you could throw in your sponsorship as well.
Oh, fantastic. So Anthony Kay, obviously from the Sports Fluent podcast, and also the coach and AK Experience, which is a weekly football show that I do every week with former NFL head coach and now offensive coordinator of Tennessee State University, Hugh Jackson, among other things, and obviously part of the Undrafted Sports Media Network, which we're going to do some huge things in the upcoming weeks. And I'm excited to be here to talk some baseball and one of my favorite topics, which I know we're going to get to, overtime or extra innings, I guess.
So it's very funny because I know baseball is not your primary sport like it is for me, but when I was first on your show and, you know, we ended up talking into an abundance of topics, but one of the things I found very fascinating was your thought on overtime. Now, I think there's a lot of purists out there. There's a lot of guys that want to say, stop changing the game. Now, I think there's a lot of people like that where it's just like, dude, don't give me a pitch clock. Don't give me a runner on second base. I think the three batter rule should realistically be two. I think two is fine. I think three's too much. Me a little bit in the middle. But I want to say when it comes to rule changes, I'm very optimistic. So what we have here for your extra innings rule, it's, let's see, 162 game season, and baseball is one of the only sports where an overtime is really fair for both sides.
100%. It's probably the only sport that truly has it. Like, there's no complaints, right? You play one full inning, each team gets their full kind of, you know, three outs, and whoever, and if you can beat them that one inning, you win. So, you know, it's not like, you know, hockey or soccer that has to do penalty kicks, or football where if you score a touchdown, you win. But if you get a field goal, well, then they get another chance. Oh, but if the defense scores, well, then it's okay, right? It's who knows what the heck's going on there. Baseball's got it down. Baseball's got it down. But, and where all this started, so I should actually go back a step, is we were having a long conversation with Coach Jackson. We were talking football. And we were talking about player safety. And all the leagues keep telling us, player safety is important. Player safety is the most important thing. And player safety. You know, we got to get, you know, headshots out of the game and, you know, kickoff returns and punt returns. We need to make them more safe. And as a, you know, human being, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. You don't want people losing their, you know, livelihoods because of a weird hit or something. I get it. So if player safety is important, then why are we making them play extra minutes, extra hours, extra innings for a regular season game? So when
the
it comes
commercials.
To right, well, that's what it's for. You're absolutely right. And some people say, well, you can't finish a game in a tie. Now, I'm not a big soccer guy. I'm not a big soccer guy. However, it's the most popular game in the world still to this day.
Yep.
They finish in ties all the time. So I'm okay with a tie in this particular instance. One, baseball has, do you know what percentage of games in baseball end in overtime?
Percentage wise, off the top of my head,
that go into extra innings, excuse me. How many?
That go into extra innings.
Yeah.
You know, if I actually don't know off the top of my head, I'd have to really look
into
that.
Depending on the year, but over the last kind of 50, 75 years, it's around 3 to 5%. So small, so insignificant.
And that's 15 games a day for 162 games, just about.
Right.
So if we go by the 3 to 5%, if we go by that give or take, it's a small sample size. So
yeah, if you think about it, each just do 3% of 162. Each team is not playing a lot of extra inning games. So to say, hey, we're just gonna call it a tie, it's not really gonna affect their record. And when you play 160, it's not like football. Actually, football, a tie would affect it more because they only play 16, well, now 17 games. But in a 162 game schedule, a tie or two isn't really going to affect your standings, right? But what it does do, it eliminates those. Look, I get it. How many times have you seen, you know, this game and you look and you go, oh my God, it went 12 hours. It was 14 innings. It doesn't really do anything. So you eliminate those extra innings. And what's the most important thing when you go into extra innings? You're using more pitchers. Now your next day pitchers, you don't have them available. So now you're hoping your starter goes deeper. Now guys are kind of, hope. That's why I say hope, right? And you're putting them at risk. You're hurting their arm, right? It's just, there's so much negative. There's so much negative that comes out of overtime that, or extra innings, that it just, it's not even needed. I'm not saying take it away from the playoffs. Obviously, once the playoffs start, you play. But just think about this. You're coming down the stretch, right? And, you know, you're playing in the ninth inning, and you know, hey, I need to get this win here, right? I need to get this win. So I can't let it. Now, you know, your strategy is a little bit different. And, you know, if you know they've been through, another team might say, hey, I know they've been through eight pitchers already. Well, I know that their bullpen's getting a little short, and it's the first game of a three-game series. Well, let me drag this out a little bit, right? It's not a bad strategy, but it's just not needed if you care about player safety. And like I said, with 3%, it makes such an insignificant change to the standings that it doesn't even make sense.
Gotcha. And also, another thing is, too, one thing you didn't mention is if you remember, Donovan McNabb read the rule book several times and didn't know that an NFL game could end in a tie until it happened to him. And you know how many people hate ties in the NFL? They think it's an abomination. You have some of these people being like, oh, I'd rather lose. Really?
But the NFL, 5% of games go into overtime. So who – again – If Donovan McNabb knew it could end in a tie, would he have played differently? Maybe. Right?
Maybe it depends. I think it's like, hey, if you got the ball and there's 2 minutes left and you think that there's going to be an overtime or this is going to end in a tie, he might – and this is a gunslinger era. I think there's a chance he throws a Hail Mary.
100%.
Going for it all, McNabb, number 5. And, well, who knows if it's picked off or if it's incomplete.
How many times have you seen your team in a tie game, 20 seconds left, you're screaming for them to go for it, and they take a knee, and it drives you nuts, right? Because they're like, hey.
Particularly before halftime, yes.
Well, if they knew that it was going to end in a tie, well, they don't do that now. It's fourth. You know, it's fourth quarter, 20 seconds left. Hey, they're doing something, whether it's a Hail Mary, whether they're going to chip away at it to, you know, throw some deep outs so that they can get out of bounds, so that they maybe have a chance at a 60. Just look at these kickers. They're kicking 60-yard field goals. So your strategy becomes different. And, again, you get ties anyways. So what's the big deal if you have a tie or two? Again, when you're only looking at 5% of a 16-game schedule – is less than a game, right? Each team will go into overtime in football less than a game a season. So who cares if there's a tie? One, maybe. It's just
– And then there's controversy on Monday morning.
Okay, no problem.
Or Tuesday if it's a Monday night game. So,
right.
I mean,
How many times have you seen – and you know this, especially – now, listen, football's one that needs to fix their overtime rule – and play like a full quarter. Now it might be a shortened quarter, like how much time is on it, but they need to play a full quarter right now. Instead of what 15 minutes, they play 10, maybe 7. I don't know what the number is, but they just play a full quarter. Because how many times have you seen, especially in playoffs, oh man, our guy didn't even get a chance, right? Tom Brady got the ball to start overtime, went down the field, scored a touchdown. My guy didn't even get a chance to touch the ball, my quarterback.
So the only thing that concerns me is that if we go by football, there's so many people, it's like, oh, I watch college ball, you know, sudden death until somebody gets tired, whatever. Or, hey, how many times have you seen, especially early on, how many times have you seen an offense milk, you know, 10 minutes of the first quarter, just himself? Yeah. So if you see 10, if you say, hey, 10-minute overtime, you could see one offense milk it until there's
if your defense can't hold a team from going on a 10-minute drive, you deserve to lose that game.
Okay, right? That's
it's offense, okay, defense, but they still teams.
And if they eat 7 minutes or so and they got run the 2 minute drill,
good for them. Congratulations. Your offense did its job, but your defense is supposed to do their job and stop them, right? Are you going to complain if the defense stops them on three straight plays, forcing three incomplete passes, and they get the ball back after 12 seconds? No.
A Bears fan speaking from history.
some defense, right? But, you know, that's what I'm saying is that, you know, and again, in football, what we talk player safety. They took the most exciting play, right, the kickoff return. They took it out of the game, essentially. We still get a couple here and there, but they've basically taken it out of the game because of player safety. Yet we let them play overtime. Doesn't make sense.
You know, it is actually funny too, because there was a couple of topics I wanted to mention. I'll go into player safety in just a moment, but let's wrap up overtime first. Yeah. So you're thinking if we go by percentages, if we go by player safety, and if we also go by the shuttle, and what I mean by the shuttle is there's a lot of times where you'll take somebody who's a call-up from AAA, he's on the roster for a couple days, but if he pitches an inning or two and there's a, you know, hey, I don't have my closer and my setup man available because they can't pitch 3 days in a row, we've got two guys out of the bullpen for tomorrow's game. If there's an off day, it doesn't matter. It's meaningless for the most part, unless you want to give them that extra day. But if those two guys pitch 2 days in a row, most likely, especially if you're the Yankees, you're the Phillies, you're a couple of teams, they're not pitching that third game in a row. So if that shuttle man is there, the guy who's constantly going from the minor league team or the alternate site to the major league roster, chances are he's going to be sent down for depth. But if you cut it off after the ninth inning.
Good. You probably don't. That person shouldn't probably be in the majors. Like, let's be honest with ourselves.
No, there's a lot of. Actually, no, Anthony. There's a lot of guys that deserve to be there.
Well, if they deserve to be there, then they'll be there. Right? You're talking about a shuttle guy that's going back and forth. Well, if he's going back and forth.
No, the reason why they do that is because he has options left.
Right.
They send him down and they get a fresh arm up. This is a common practice for all teams, and there's a lot of guys that deserve to be there.
They can still do that because this is what I was about to say. Because the days of like Nolan Ryan, you know, pitching complete games all the time, those games are done. You're never going to see.
But that was done decades ago.
I know. I was going to say there. You know, I just did a piece on Wilt Chamberlain in '62. You know, averaging 48.5 minutes a game in a 48-minute, you know, sport.
Yeah, never.
Those days are done. So you're going to need that fresh arm still anyways, but wouldn't you rather, if you're a team knowing that, hey, the max we're going to do is nine innings every single game. Like we're playing nine innings for the whole season. Now you have your best players. Well, what does that do? You put your best players on the field, which gives the best product on the field, right? To the point that you meant, if you go through 7-8 pitchers and now they can't pitch for 2 days and you're like I mentioned earlier, you're in the first game of a 3-game series or a 4-game series. And now the next day you got to put out a pitcher who, you know, who knows what you're going to get out of them. You're not putting the best possible product on the field for the fans either. There's like a lot of implications that come into play.
Yes, and it actually does give a chance for some of those guys to play hero, like if they want a pinch hit.
Right, the bottom of the ninth is that's it. Yeah, now you're managing different. It's actually more exciting. Right, like how many times I've seen it where you've seen like a pinch hitter come in, right, first pitch, boom, home run, and you're like, wow, like it's that's exciting. Whereas you're playing it different, saying, hey, let's just play it safe. You know, I gotta watch my positional guys here. Who I pitch hit? No, you're gonna throw if you're in the bottom of the ninth, right? That's a true advantage for a home team. You're in the bottom of the ninth. You know, there's no tenth. So now you're clearing out your bench. You're putting in whoever your best hitter is because he's not gonna have to go into the field. He could be useless in the field. Not that he'd be a major league player if he's useless in the field, but he could be useless in the field. I need a hit right now to win the game.
You could take your power hitting catcher off the bench and not have to worry about him behind the plate. You're absolutely right.
I think that's a real home field advantage.
And one thing that gets into consideration, if you remember a couple years ago, do you remember the game 163?
No, I do not.
Well, what happened was I think the last one. Let me take a look. Let's see. MLB game 163. Let me look it up. Essentially, it's a Major League Baseball tiebreaker, and you know, you can't have two games in a wild card. So it actually recently happened. It was between the Cubs and the Brewers. And sure enough, the Rockies had a crazy schedule going on. And they actually lost to the Cubs.
I kind of like the Cubs. I'm okay with
that. So what? Again, Bears fans saying that to the Cubs. But what happens is, right, essentially there needs to be a tiebreaker because two teams can't go into a wild card round if there's already a first spot in the wild card.
Sure.
So they actually had to duke it out and play a wild card game to qualify for the other wild card
game. Yeah, now that game, right, of course.
And it's interesting because if you have these tiebreakers, right, if you have the same record, two teams in the National League, and they're like, we got wins, losses, ties, then it's just like, oh, God. Another game, 163, another for all the marbles games. I mean, don't you just love those? It's like, attention, all hands on deck. Everybody ice up the night before. We got do or die time.
I'm much like LeBron James when he's in first place. I'm all for play-in games. However, if it's my team on the bubble, I probably disagree. I'm with him then there too. That the person should be fired who came up with that idea. But no, it's
double agent on the whole thing.
It's 100%. It's listen. It's it's an exciting way to play. I like those play-in games. I think they're going to be really exciting this year, right? Like again, we're talking now. We're going to go into basketball, but just imagine you got the Lakers, right, who had their two best players hurt for a long stretch, and they're going to play the Warriors. I'm not potentially. They're going to play a Warriors team who's been up and down all season. Steph's been hurt, with the potential, at least I think they hint at it, of Klay Thompson coming back, and now you're going to have Klay and Steph in a play-in game. I don't think he will, but they've been teasing it.
Right.
Klay and Steph playing AD and LeBron in a play. How many people are going to watch that game? Everybody's going to watch that game.
Yeah, I would stay up for that, man. You know, both of us are on the East Coast. If they said, hey, it starts 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, you'd be like, you know what? I could try and suck it up and pay for it tomorrow morning.
I am going to take my afternoon siesta like I did when I lived in Europe and be ready for the 10:30 tip off is what I would do. Because, yeah, I'm watching that game. There's nothing more exciting than playing you're in. 100%. Like, it'll have a March Madness feel to it.
Absolutely. So the other thing I want to mention about player safety. Now, I actually years ago, do you remember in baseball when the Mets had Yoenis Cespedes? He had his injuries, but at the same time, his golf became an issue.
No.
So what happened is now, Anthony, take this from an ownership or even a fan's perspective. Let's say the best player on your team, right? He's not in the lineup that night, but yet 7-8 o'clock in the morning, he woke up and played a full 18 holes of golf. Would you be pissed?
Yes.
He's got a calf injury.
You know,
he woke up early, played 18 holes of golf, and he's not in the lineup.
Yeah, I want to think about it for a second, but then I'd say, yeah, because I know. Right. Like, look, when people think of golf, they don't think of a very, you know, physically intense game. However, when you play a different sport, and I learned this the hard way, you're using different muscles. So if he's golfing, there's a lot of twisting, right? Depending on how he shoots, right? There's probably a lot of twisting. It is going to put strain on his legs, on his hips, on his back, right? Like I just saw, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, there was an episode of I Am Athlete. And Brandon Marshall talked about going out and playing golf. And he's, you know, recently retired. He hasn't been retired for that long. And it was been a week or two, and he's still complaining about his back hurting from golfing. Right? Professional athlete here. And I'll give you my own personal experience.
In a contact sport, right?
Yeah. Look, I'm an older guy, but I play in like a lot of men's leagues. So I finish my basketball season and I go right into baseball. Now I'm went the whole basketball season, not an injury, all good, everything's fine. I get three games into my baseball season, and I come up hobbling. Why? Well, because I'm using different muscles and I hurt my hammy, right? And it's just because, and they're like, well, you just came out of basketball. I'm like, yeah, it's different. The way you push off, the way that, the way that you twist, the way that you do things. So yeah, so if you're hurt for one sport as maybe as little labor intensive as golf may be, then you shouldn't be golfing. It's also a bad look. It's a bad, like, you don't go out, boxing, you wouldn't do another sport. So why do golf? It's not a good look. So if I was an owner, yeah, I'd definitely be perturbed.
So what happened was, my thought is also the trenches on some of those golf courses, and it was a hammy, then it was his ankle, then it was his calf.
Yeah, if you're injured.
I thought it was awful. Now, years prior, we're talking when I was younger, still in high school, Josh Beckett, he actually had his start. They're like, okay, we're going to skip your turn in the rotation. The next day, he went to golf at a charity event. And you know how the people are in Boston in all four major sports. Oh, my goodness. That is when the bridge started to burn. That's when he started getting fresh with the media and everything. And, Josh Beckett's one of those Hellraiser type guys. And he was also involved in the Beer and Wings incident. But the reason why I asked these things is I actually had the chance to talk to former, there was a question and answer thing. Danny Graves, former Cincinnati Reds pitcher, was a starter, was a closer at one point. And I asked him, do you agree about him playing golf at, not nowhere near 100%. And he went and talked a little bit about his contract. Now, I'm not sure how basketball goes, how football goes, although you see a lot of guys in football, broadcast their vacations, Brady cliff diving with his kid, all that, right? He said this, he goes, I was not allowed to play pickup basketball. Now, the last time I heard of Danny Graves was 2004, 2005. So this is very early to the party, before social media, all this other stuff. Yes, was not allowed to play pickup basketball, was not allowed to own or operate a motorcycle, yeah. Was not allowed to go in the ocean. Now, some people are like, what the hell's that got to do? Well, eliminates anything related to a boat. You can't drink on a boat. No jet skis, no fishing, freak accident.
Yeah. No, listen, it's funny that you say that because a lot of teams, right? Listen, every player is an investment in their business, right? Yes. You need your best players to perform at their highest level, to be healthy so that you can win games, so you can get better TV deals, better endorsements, et cetera. All of that brings in revenue to the team. So I've heard actually quite a few teams put in stuff like if they know someone is, an avid skydiver, they're like, hey, when you're under contract with us, there's no skydiving or else your contract is void. And now some people agree. Yeah, exactly. And some agents are better than others. I guess some players are quicker than others to say, okay, fine. But I've heard of multiple contracts that have those types of stipulations where you can't do certain things. Because you get into incidents where, just recently there was a player who got hurt, but he was working out in the off season.
I wanted to go into that. Yes.
It's one thing when you're working out, if that's truly how you got hurt or if you're rehabbing, right? But if just imagine, I just signed Patrick Mahomes to a $500 million contract. He goes out skydiving and breaks his leg. I'm not paying him. That's stupid. He shouldn't be doing that. Now, if he's his own man, he has every right to do it, but then you got to pay the consequences of it. Because if I'm a regular guy and I am a delivery man and that's what I do for a living, and I go do something dumb and I break my leg and now I can't drive, well, no one's paying me, right? Like, okay, if I have insurance, fine. But other than that, no one's paying me because I went and did something and broke my leg. Why should an athlete be any different?
I got you. Now, it's actually funny because that guy, Yoenis Cespedes, again, another freak injury. Did you hear about the wild boar incident?
I don't know. Maybe. You gotta refresh my memory. I don't know how I could forget a wild boar incident.
So what happens is the same guy we're talking about, of course, this is the typical Mets. So this guy is already he's already injured. He's already on the injured list. But what happened is the original story came out that how he got off his horse, he fell into a pothole, and his ankle basically violently broke, and that basically ended his season. But that was actually all a lie. What happened was, on his ranch, he sidestepped a wild boar, then fell into the hole and violently broke his ankle. So they actually took this to arbitration, and apparently these two were kind of looking at each other like, you know, I just got to do this to do my due diligence. And the other guy's just going, yeah, I deserve it. So instead of that $30 million he was owed, between everything going on, it ended up being something like $9 million. But could you just imagine that? You're a Met fan. You're like, you're listening to the radio and you hear like Steve Sommers being like, you want an Cespedes for the New York Knickerbockers, suddenly sidesteps a wild boar on his ranch. Clyde, I don't understand the logic.
I guarantee you there are more stories than we know of people doing stupid stuff and getting hurt. And I think back, and I get it that this is fictional, but I think back to, I'm going to draw a blank on the show, Ballers, right? Where the O lineman or D lineman, I think it's the D lineman, gets hurt playing, you know, paintball. And he tries to lie and say, oh, I was working out and I, you know, did. I bet you there's a lot more of that than we know.
Oh, yeah. What about the freaking welts on your leg?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it happens.
I just think it's unfair because you got some of these baseball players. In recent memory, you could look this up. There was some accident with Madison Bumgarner with a dirt bike accident.
Oh, there's, yeah.
Well, yeah, at the same time, same team, San Francisco Giants, Barry Zito was banned from surfing because, you know, water sports, blah, blah, blah. And surfing was this therapeutic thing. So yeah. Madison Bumgarner, now mind you, same position, starting pitcher. One guy's allowed to dirt bike, and you know what happens with dirt bikes. Motors, jumps, you name it. And surfing, that could be anything from paddle boarding to big waves.
If it's not in your contract, go nuts. Do whatever it is you feel. You're protected. But if it's in your contract that you can't do that, then you got to be careful because it could cost you a lot of money.
And we only hear about the stupid stories that are actually like legit. Like, do you remember Dexter McCluster breaking his arm because he was trying to lift up his luggage bag to get his phone out underneath it or something?
Dexter, I gotta get him on. I think I vaguely remember that one now that you mentioned it. But there's tons of just like, I've heard stories of, you know, guys picking up their kid and pulling something in their back, and you know, a guy stubbed his toe, lost a nail, right, gone for 3 months because it's
Blake Snell, a funny one, after his Cy Young award season. Now there was something that happened. Now mind you, I think a starting pitcher, if you got a foot problem and it's your plantain foot, big problems. And yeah, he didn't have a great year after that. And I think it was that's what happened. He got out of the shower and tried to move some sort of light fixture, and it broke on it. It landed on his foot and it broke his middle toe. Yeah, he somehow only missed one or two starts, but that's crucial.
We don't talk about little stuff like that, like, you know, you broke a baby toe, broke a pinky finger.
Oh, that's a big deal.
But those are huge things, especially for pitchers, right? Like, yes, every single – so it's
– Robinson Cano broke his pinky toe. That next year, his swing was not the same.
No, your balance it changes. As small as that may seem, it does change, and you have to adjust to it. So, you know, we don't talk about it because it's silly, it's small. You know, the old school traditionalists will be like, oh, you know, suck it up, rub some dirt on it, and, you know, tape it up, let's go. But, you know, that's not,
I mean,
that's
I,
not the
I,
era
I
we
broke
live in.
My foot, and then, you know, close to 10 years later, it left a bone spur. So I actually had an inch sawed off my foot and had the ligaments sewed on. So, I mean, I actually understand the pain of these foot injuries. When people, and it's the side of the arch, too. So we got like this right here. And then, you know, you take off what's bone, an inch of bone, and you sew ligaments back on.
Listen,
but people don't think about this stuff because they're armchair fans.
Take a look. I was lucky enough to do an interview with Chris Carter once, and you take it now. I played wide receiver, but you know, in high school, and my hands, you can just see how crooked all my knuckles are. Like you see his, and they're like that. They're all just kind of these weird shape because you break them all the time, and it affects the way you play. And now it's worse now. Like when I played, it was like, hey, throw some gloves on it and off we go. But now it's just like your hands are just throbbing all the time.
You're throwing me off here now. I'm just making sure that I am well.
Yeah, no. If you did break a kind of ear, you should be fine.
I mean, I've jammed a couple of fingers before, but I mean, I think that's a normal routine as long as you don't do anything violent. I don't think I got a bone spur or anything else. Maybe like a welt occasionally. That's about it. But I mean, you know, I work with my hands for a living. You know, occasionally, you know, hit it, you get a busted knuckle or whatever. But nothing structurally where I got to get an X-ray. Thank goodness for that. But going forward with player safety, I think, I mean, listen, if any players association could have every player scot-free after cheating and admitting it and going about it, pretty much you got the best backup and support in all of sports. In fact, I think every job out there. But it's one thing because if we go to these football players, right? It's like, okay, the guy ate bad sushi. Okay, void his contract. Cut him.
Yeah, you know, that's something that the players union, sorry to jump in, but that's something that the NFL players union needs to do a better job with, right? Like we had this conversation a few weeks ago about these guaranteed contracts, and it's not to say everybody in the NBA has one. They don't. But the vast majority of players do. And you can look at things a little bit differently, right? And the team's going to look at you a little bit differently when they know, you know, you know, guys, you can see their contracts where it's at this point, right? There's no more guaranteed money or it's very limited or there won't be a big cap hit. You know they're going to be a salary cap casualty, just boom. And I think if you didn't have that flexibility, if when you signed a player, it was a guaranteed contract. One, I think they're a little bit more cautious with who they sign, right? Because we've seen them take chances on guys that maybe don't deserve a fifth or sixth chance, but they're like, hey, he's really talented and it's a non-guaranteed contract. I'm going to do it. So I think that changes the dynamic. I think there's more willingness from the team to maybe work, maybe restructure, whatever those other options are, than just, hey, let's just cut it. Right now, I don't know the reasons behind, you know, my Bears, they just cut their left tackle, their starting tackle, Charles Leno. I don't know this why. We need an offensive line, so I'm not quite sure. But it was just easy to do. There wasn't a big salary cap. You know, it questions. And then we get into, you know, on my show, on the Coach and AK, we talk a lot about social issues. And you can see basketball players are way more open, right, talking about things because most of them have a guaranteed contract. So they're not worried that if I say what I really think, I'm going to get cut. Now, some people like that. Some people dislike it. But I think, listen, you're a person, you're a citizen of the country. Like, you're allowed to speak your mind. You don't just have to shut up and dribble. And I think that affects some things, too, with the NFL where they don't have those guaranteed contracts.
It's actually funny too, because if you go by back to baseball, you have felt some of these guys, like there's a good chance that if you know, 162 regular season games, and that's without the playoffs, how many times is that star player, like take a guy on any team. Let's go with Nolan Arenado, who's on the Cardinals. Out of that 162 games, a star player, how many days is he going to be able to talk to the media? Or are people going to be like, hey, Nolan, how are you? What, 100 games? And some of these NFL guys, they get it like, what, 20 times a year?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's at the most. That's like if you're Pat Mahomes, you get to speak to the media.
Yeah. And basketball's a little bit, but most of the non-stars in football, you don't even know who they are because they're wearing a helmet all the time.
Exactly. Right?
Like, you know, so you don't really know.
You don't know who the guard is for the most part.
No, other than you see a big, you know, he's 6'6", 300 pounds. You're going to notice a 6', you know, 6'3", 300 pounder walking down the street, but you don't know.
Look at the NFL now. I mean, unless you're a rookie or unless you got a big contract, you'll know who that guy is. You just see another huge ass guy who's built like a tank.
Well, unless you follow the team, right? We should say that. But yeah, like for the most part, like the average person, you're right.
The average person doesn't know who the left guard is on that team.
Right.
And exactly, he's also not speaking to the media for the most part, unless he gets into a brawl or something.
Yeah. Listen, you don't want anyone to really know your guard, right? Because it either means they're getting too many holding penalties. In most cases. Now, if it's because he's pancaking everybody, that's a different then you're okay with it. But if it's because he's getting a couple of holding penalties a game, you want to go unnoticed, I would think.
You see, bingo, there you go. But really, you go by the media and everything else. I mean, again, I think as far as the social issue goes, you know, Anthony, there's one thing, and I wish I was able to talk to you and Coach about this, is a lot of people would not know this, but I've actually have suffered from my part myself, whether if it's because of my last name or my learning disability or anything else. Flat out, I know it. I've been there. And believe it or not, the school system over here in my hometown of Danbury, Connecticut, thought I was Native Mexican until I was 16. When my grandfather, who he's the first generation Taurus, he had nothing more going on him in the Rio de Janeiro, Brazil area, hopped on a boat, and he changed his name to Taurus and went to Newark, New Jersey. A couple years later,
changed his name.
So I think I want to say before he hopped on the boat, he changed his last name to Taurus.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, obviously, you're never going to, you know, we're never going to solve in a, whatever, 30-minute conversation. But Coach and I try to have some really kind of deep, open discussions, and we bring on a lot of guests to talk about it. And I always bring up like my kind of my piece, right? Where it's, listen, when I lived in Arizona, first of all, I'm Greek. And if you see my last name, you know that I'm Greek. But when I'm in, Arizona, a little darker tan, right, you think I'm Mexican. And I lived there back in the time when they were doing the stop and search everybody. And I used to tell people, because of my job, I was back and forth between Phoenix and Tucson. And every other trip I was getting stopped and pulled over. But here's the thing. Yeah. I never thought I was going to get shot because I was, didn't feel that. And then when I have conversations with people who are like, I'm scared I'm going to get shot or something's going to happen to me, that's where, my heart kind of breaks for them. And let me tell you this story. I'll tell you this story and I'll show you why I don't understand, right? Why I do this and I try to understand some of the social issues. I had been transferred. So my job, I was living in Denver and they transferred me to San Francisco. And I thought, that'd be really cool. I'm going to jump in my car. I have the moving guys take all my stuff and I'm going to drive. I'm going to do this drive from Denver. It takes me up out of Colorado, across Wyoming, I think into Utah, where I was going to stop. And then the second leg of the trip takes me to San Francisco. Okay. So as I exit Colorado and I'm driving through Wyoming, I slap the cruise control on. I'm like a 90, right? And I think it's a 75, 70, if I remember correctly. But I'm doing 90, okay? I admit that. So as I'm driving along, of course, I get pulled over. Big, scary, like state trooper from Wyoming with like the big hat. I don't know if you can see it on the camera. Big hat, right? And then the chin strap, not the chin strap that comes under, the chin strap that comes across the front of his face.
Oh, God.
And I've never had this before. So this is the first time I actually was, a little bit nervous. But as he walks up, he kind of unbuckles, the gun. His whatever buckles there, and he kind of has it a little bit out, and he comes up, to my car, and I apologize to everyone in Wyoming for the accent I'm about to do, and he says, "Y'all know how fast you're going," and I said, "I had my cruise control." I said, "I have a cruise control at 80." I know it was 75. I was going a little bit fast, and I think I remember him saying, "It was like, oh, the speed limit is 70. I clocked you at 88 miles an hour." And me being me, I said, "Oh, it's too bad I wasn't driving a DeLorean. I could have gone back in time and driven by you slower." Now he takes
he
off
didn't
his
appreciate that.
Hold on, he takes off his chin strap and he looks at me. Ha! That was funny enough to get you out of a ticket. Slow down. And he pops his chin strap back on and goes back and walks away, and let me out of the ticket.
He didn't say what county this is or nothing like that.
Nothing. Nothing. Said that was funny. I guess he's a big Back to the Future fan and sent me on my way. My point is, I felt comfortable enough to make that joke that should have got me a bigger ticket, let's be honest. And he let me off. And I think that's the difference, is that I can do that and someone else can't. I think that's unfair. I think that's really unfair.
You know, there's only been twice I've been pulled over. And the first time I thought it was a 65 mile an hour zone. I was on the way to Albany, New York. I was taking these back roads. Haven't really taken the journey, but my girlfriend was at college. I'm in the, I think it's called Copac, New York or something. He's got me 72 and a 55 when the GPS said 65. And sure enough, it was just a calm, you know, write the ticket. And on top of this, I forgot my wallet in my car. I wasn't in my car. I was in somebody else's car. So I'm thinking to myself, ah, oh, son of a, this guy's going to pork me. But he was nice. But sure enough, I was actually in my girlfriend's town. She was in the, this person was cutting me off. I was angry. I've been down there a bunch of times. A cop gets me going too fast. But he starts, it seemed like he went, oh, there. And they looked at my license and he goes, all right, dude, what are you in my town for? And I'm like, damn it. And the thing is, he goes, all right, I want her ID too. And I'm like, sir, this is my car. My name's on the license plates and on the paperwork. My name is Aldo Torres Jr. And he goes, okay, can I search the car? Now, some people are saying, you know, why not? And I'm like, well, first off, you just don't want the agony, the suspense. And for anyone that's listening, you do have the right to say no. And if they say why, just please no. Now, my main concern, right, is, you know, I work with my hands and I do a lot of side work, and I just didn't want him to think that something was a weapon. Yeah. It's like if I got a sawzall in the back, because I do a lot of tree prune with a sawzall, right? But if he sees a metal blade back there, right, I don't want to be in like, how many catalytic converters you cutting off here, son? I don't need any of that. So you just say no.
Yeah.
But that's fine. Now, I could go all day about this with you and Coach another time. And yes, that is a certain thing that goes on. Do I think that goes on with certain players and certain media? I think it depends on the sport. I think some people bring it up more than others. For example, I talked to Coach Hugh on draft night, and I said, listen, Coach, if we go by Justin Fields, 8-1, that's positive. I have put that in there, Anthony. Come on.
We're winning 11 games.
So there we go. I mentioned, did you have a problem with Justin Fields' run the 40? And he goes, well, that's how he got drafted. But if we go back, Lamar Jackson did not run it. And Kyler Murray, even though he was already enlisted to be a top five draft pick and the first quarterback taken off the board in this draft, he did not run the 40. And the rumor was he ran a 4.4. I think Fields ran a faster time.
Yeah, Justin Fields, I think, felt like one. Look, if you think it's going to hurt your draft stock to run it, you don't run it. Lamar Jackson is an interesting one, because I think had he run it, he probably would have got drafted higher than 32, because obviously he's fast. And I think it did. I think it helped. You know, Justin Fields, I think, ran it. I think Justin Fields, let's be honest, I think he got a bit of a raw deal. One, because he has to be a quarterback in Chicago. But two, I love my Bears. I'm just kidding. Two, because, you know, he was a lot of people's second or third high, you know, rated quarterback. And yet when you saw all the mock drafts, he was like the fifth or sixth one coming off the board. And I think maybe part of him felt like, hey, I need to run this, show up. I think he ran like a 4.3. And he's like, hey, I need to run this to show people like I have all the tools that you want, you know, in today's NFL to be successful. And so look, it's each player's preference, but understand that running it or not running it may affect your, you know, it didn't affect Kyler Murray, but I think it did hurt Lamar Jackson.
You know, it's just very funny because I'm not sure about that, because if we go back to Lamar, there was even people in the reports and many coaches saying, could he try out for wide receiver?
Yeah, that's
– and with Justin Fields and Kyler Murray, they didn't say, oh, running back or wide receiver. They said, oh, this guy's a quarterback. I'm just concerned about his hand size or his height.
But with Kyler Murray, weren't they saying maybe he – wasn't he – like, shouldn't he play – maybe he might want to play baseball?
Am I remembering correctly? The funny thing is, right, if I remember correctly, he was signed with the Oakland A's, and the Oakland A's, along with his contract, allowed him to finish up his college football career, and that was the deal.
Yeah.
But it wasn't more about of him playing professional baseball and him becoming the next Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders. It was more about the prospect and him being a quarterback. Now, there's two things that were judged based on him, and that was, number one, are his hands big enough? And number two, how tall is he? And if you've noticed, right, and I've even seen this with the more wide receivers that just recently got drafted this year. At some places, they're labeled at 5'7". At some of them, they're labeled 5'9". So it's like, dude, what the hell? What is it?
Well, everyone plays that game a little bit, right? Is it barefoot? Is it in your shoes? You know, listen, I'm telling you right now, I'm barefoot. I'm 6'3". That's how tall I am. I'm actually,
a lot taller than I thought.
No, yeah. So, but I'm 100%. I'm 6'3", barefoot. However, right, I have programs from high school and from university when I played basketball where I was listed as a 6'4", 6'5", right? Because it looked better. It was a little bit more intimidating to the other team. And if I had the right shoes on, maybe I was 6'4". I don't know. So I'm not, look at Kevin Durant. He's been listed anywhere from 6'7" to 7'1". So I think, it depends who does the measuring, what are they trying to prove, especially in the NFL and at the quarterback position where everyone has this kind of stereotypical thing. He's got to have like 10 inch hands and he's got to be 6'5" or, 6'5". It's got to be this height, this weight, to be successful, when the reality is he doesn't have to be. Look, it doesn't hurt, but you've seen Drew Brees seem to be just fine not being 6'5".
Russell Wilson,
I think, does just fine not being, not being that height.
He's your Hall of Famer. Yeah.
Now, I will say this. There's some truth to the hand size in the sense that unless your hands are really strong, right, you want to make sure that they are, because that's the other part of it, is how strong are the hands, whether they're big or not. Because you look at a guy like, and I'm going to flash back, to the Bears. But if you look back to 06 in Miami in the Super Bowl, Rex Grossman, it was raining. He had notoriously very small hands, and the ball was slipping out of his hands like the whole game, and it probably cost them a Super Bowl. So there is some truth to the hand size thing, but again, you could have big hands and just weak, and you're going to have the same issue, or have small hands and they're really strong with a good grip, and it doesn't matter.
I think it's a case by case basis.
It's case by exactly. Right. There's no you can't just say listen, how many quarterbacks have we seen who've been the prototypical, 6'5", whatever. And
ironically, stink. I was about to say 6'5". Well, I keep thinking 6'5", ideal size for a great quarterback and has a good successor. Mason Rudolph. He looks terrible.
Right?
What happened to Duck Hodges? I don't know. I was a Duck Dodgers fan. Come on. But nope.
So
Lady Luck is banging our man for that guy. it's funny too, because baseball doesn't have the ideal size, because if you see Marcus Stroman, he's got that height doesn't measure heart. Some guys label him as 5'6" and he's dominating the mound.
Yeah. Baseball, obviously there's good and bad things, right? Like you think back when you're a taller pitcher, you're coming at it from the ball's coming at you from a different angle, right? I remember Randy Johnson, mm-hmm. obviously maybe the exception, but so tall that the ball's kind of coming down on you on this weird angle. And if he has any kind of velocity at all, right, with that weird angle, just because he's so tall standing on the mound, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be harder to hit than a different, everybody that you're used to who's around the same height.
Absolutely. A lot of funny things about the game.
Yeah.
Although, do you think player safety is going to be a thing going forward? I mean, so again, we've discussed regular season ties to save injuries and mostly the pitchers. And as far as the players union goes for football to baseball, now obviously baseball is the best one. You could just tell because of recent history and the shit they've gotten away with. Do you think that, because again, we're talking about you could be working out at home, you could be at a team facility, you could be at a minor league facility. So there's this big thing, of course, where NFL teams have opted out for these optional workouts. But I've also heard many stories where a lot of guys weren't at these optional workouts. They were at home, a gym, or wherever. Do you think this is going to change in football, or do you think that somebody has their hands tied in it?
There's a couple of things. So with in football in general, listen, if it's an optional workout, then – right? It's optional. If you don't want it to be optional, don't call it a freaking optional workout, right? Like, I hate that, it's optional, but if you don't come, you're ostracized. No. Listen, if it's optional, it's optional.
Like, however, the guy from Tennessee, that big guy that's got the mental health problems going on, they're like, oh, he didn't go to the optional workouts. He said he was going to go. They're holding it against him, against his neck.
No, it's optional. Like, leave me alone. However, there is – so you said two things, so I want to touch on both of them. So one, in football – I think they're going down a path that's going to be a little bit scary because of COVID, player safety, kind of these, and, not having a preseason last year. You know, the players, of course, love it. They just want to play. But if you look at the first few weeks of the NFL season last year, it was sloppy. I don't think they realized how much they kind of got in sync with each other during a preseason, especially when you have new players coming in, especially a new quarterback. So I think that's something I'm scared of, is that they take away too much of the preseason and too much of the OTAs and those types of things, because I think they're important for team chemistry and understanding kind of your role and positioning on the field. I don't want them to completely abolish that. From a player safety standpoint, player safety is – all right, I'm just going to say it. Player safety isn't that important to the leagues until it starts hurting their pockets. Let's be honest, right?
Especially football. It's like concussions. Let me take my wad of cash here, my wad of cash there, tape it around. Yeah, sorry, I can't hear you. What's about safety?
Concussions are important unless it's, a star player that you need in the next play. And that's, they've gotten better. Don't get me wrong. They have gotten better. But you still see instances where how's that person still on the field? Like, he clearly got hit, right? And you take, look at hockey. I'm gonna end it on this. This is the last thing I'm gonna remember. Look, hockey still allows. I don't even know why they wear helmets. Just take them off, because if you're gonna allow a grown man with a frozen fist punch another grown man in the head, and that's okay, that gets you a 10-minute penalty or whatever. Well, you don't care about player safety. You just don't.
They're fining and suspending guys now more than ever before. Don't get me started about my Rangers and how James Dolan had to fire somebody because the Knicks are doing good.
The person that should be fired is James Dolan, but maybe that's a conversation for another day. That's not on Dolan.
Listen, I think me, you, and Coach could go 2 hours just talking about James Dolan. You kidding me?
I could go 20 years and put on a better product than they have had in New York too, if James Dolan would just give me the chance.
Like I said, he's the second worst owner in all of sports. And yeah, the first one.
We've had this discussion and I agree with you.
There is a man named Dan Snyder. The pain.
The team that will remain nameless. How long do you think before they get a team, like an actual name in Washington?
I told you about the trademark garbage that went on last year. Like, the guy with the 44 trademark spent $10,000 on it, all that. And what's actually stupid is the Warriors, the Golden State Warriors, they had the trademark, unoccupied, and he didn't grab it. That's been something that's been labeled, I want to say, since the late 2000s, early 2010s, the Washington Warriors. just go with like a spear and that's it. Go back to the old helmets with the number. But of course, you know, I think there's going to be some that disagree with that. I say they give it another year. The reason being is I think, now correct me if I'm wrong. I would do it because there's the gap where it's after the Super Bowl and before the draft. So what I would do if I'm a businessman, okay, now even though I've taken business and marketing classes, but I'm not know this big shot professional, wouldn't it be best to start a new brand before the draft? That way it's like, could you imagine the first overall pick, the Washington X select? You got the first round of jerseys.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And, yeah, the first, yeah, and you unveiled the jersey on draft night to that first selection.
So, I think great it's idea. A week before draft night or something around there. Somebody's going to find a solution to it. But I think it's really bad to sell those jerseys and then, you know, before it's like, oh, yeah, they're revealing new jerseys. It's like for the Patriot fans, right? When they revealed the new jerseys, everyone's going, what the hell is this? They're terrible. No. You know what I mean? They had no Brady jersey. And then next thing you know, it's like these ugly ass stripes on the shoulders. Like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, they'll be fine. All right, man.
So, you know what? There's a lot of topics and we'll definitely be going on throughout the season. So there's definitely topics to boot. I guess one thing, do you know what's going on with Albert Pujols?
Enlighten me.
So he was one of those guys that he could have gotten in the Hall of Fame if he retired as a Cardinal. And that's 11 years with one team. Obviously, that's 31 years old. And you're thinking, whoa, he could have retired now and gotten to the Hall of Fame? It's absolutely ludicrous. And even though I'm a younger guy, Anthony, I think he's one of the best hitters. I think the best hitter I've seen in my generation. Best hitter I've ever seen during that span. So the Angels let him go when I think they could have done with what they did with Alex Rodriguez. That is, announce his last day, his last game as an Angel. Big ceremony, big chant, thank you, Albert, all that. Just to give him that good send-off, because I don't think there's going to be any other team that's going to pick him up. I think there's maybe only two teams that would pick him up, and I think that would just be to sell tickets. Now, obviously...
Look, that happens. That happens. There are tons of examples where players have either played too long, they played for a little bit more money, or a team picked them up, you know, to sell some tickets, or there's tons of examples of that. So I wouldn't be too surprised if that happened.
Were all those first ballot Hall of Famers unanimously? Like if he's not a first round,
sure.
First
season, it might not be in baseball, but Hakeem Olajuwon played for the Raptors. There was no, you know, he was not anywhere near the player he was. Patrick Ewing played for the Magic. Michael Jordan suited up for his team, the Wizards, solely, let's be honest, he was 39, 30 years old, solely to sell some tickets, right? Ticket sales were garbage. He's not a very good general manager, so the product on the court was horrible. So he threw on his sneakers, and they sold out every single game for two seasons. Right,
like, one of the best Cowboys running backs of all time playing for the Cardinals for 2 years,
That was different, right? Emmitt did that because he wanted to break Walter Payton's record, which is why I actually have very – I don't like Emmitt Smith for doing that. Well, I think actually, your time was done.
Now, he wants to play every day even though his body says he can't. Yeah. Now, he's holding up two superstars in Jared Walsh, and you may not have heard of him. But I know you've heard of Shohei Ohtani. Mm-hmm. So Ohtani-senpai could be in the DH spot instead of Albert Pujols, who's aging. And right now he's got 667 home runs. Wants to see if he could – the closest he could get to 700.
Yeah. Of course. Listen, I get it. Like, as a player, you want to do your thing, but the team has to do what's best for them. But at the same time – right, you do want to honor your greats. You don't want to push them out the door sometimes. Like, some owners are different than others, right? So I get it. I kind of like the loyalty thing, but you got to do what's best for your team at the same time, right?
Yeah. So I guess last question, what is the best and worst trend in baseball?
The best and worst trend in baseball. Okay. I'll start with the worst because I think it's absolutely horrible. I don't know if that's a trend, but it's the worst thing about baseball is the unwritten rules. So the fact
are being faded out.
They need to be gone. So I think that's the worst trend is that we still have those unwritten rules. I think the best thing about baseball, and this I think is maybe my youth coming back, because this is what I used to love about going to the park, is that it's held true to the analytics, to the data. Like, I used to be that kid that was at the baseball diamond, you know, watching the game, and like I'd be sitting next to my uncle who'd be sitting like, oh, it was a 1-4-3, right? And he's writing it all out. You know what I mean? And I still see like a lot of that, like those analytics and those pieces of baseball still being part of the game. And I think that's fantastic. And that's, you know, as much as I'm this weird kind of on the fence where there's a bunch of this old stuff I want to get rid of, but then there's a bunch of this old stuff that I really think is important to keep. And so I think that's a really good, my favorite thing about baseball.
I got you. And a lot of people are saying this is getting too analytically driven, but I remember as a kid picking up the New York Times, going to the sports section. Ooh, what do you know? What's the number one statistic in there after it says how many at-bats? Batting average. Beautiful thing, is it not? And that's me knowing that as a kid. And it's gotten, you know, just above that. Now, there's certain statistics where I could say, you know, oh, you know what? I understand this, but let's move on from there. Now, I say the best trend in baseball is letting people express themselves. These unwritten rules are fading away. If you want to bat flip, fine. There's a difference between bat flipping and then jaw in your mouth as you run the diamond. That's a little, you know, overboard. But if a pitcher could, you know, hit his chest after a strikeout, hey, yeah, I mean, I've seen, I saw Jock Peterson, he thought he walked it off, he flipped it off, he's like, let's go, he's ended up getting caught in the outfield, and goes, oh, damn, never mind, you know what I mean? There's always those typical things. I think the worst trends in baseball is, let's see, now, I know people want to discuss launch angle, but just not too long ago, Gleyber Torres and Javi Baez both weren't hitting. They were chasing pitches, hitting ground balls. Usually they were low and outside pitches, and they were ground balls. Launch angle, it's like, okay, they're both hitting about 10 degrees, which means they are hitting the ball into the ground. That's an average of a ground ball, typical out. But then, you know, they adjusted, not trying to do too much. They've gotten better. You know, that's, again, analytics. But I hate these guys that are trying to overdo it. Like Joey Gallo, he's trying to hit the ball over the fence every time. So when people are striking out, and you see the all-time strikeout records going on, it's terrible.
Terrible.
I mean, make contact for crying out loud.
I'm gonna give you. Yeah, I think that is a bad trend, and it reminded me of two, or I thought of two things. So one thing I love in addition because of the analytics, it's as I'm raising my kids, I can talk to them about, listen, when they fail, right, when they fall on their face, and I can tell them, listen, a baseball player can go up to bat 10 times and get 3 hits, 3 out of 10, and be considered a Hall of Famer. Don't be afraid to try and fail. So I love that about baseball because I can't really do it with any other sport. And then the thing I hate about baseball, and I'm going to leave it at this. I'm going to drop my mic and walk away when I say this. The thing that I hate about baseball is that the Houston Astros are still considered the World Series champions after being caught cheating. So I'm going to leave it on that one because that one drives me nuts. There's no other sport where you can get caught cheating and still be a champ.
Tom Brady?
Not in the game. He didn't get caught cheating in a Super Bowl.
After all the controversy, everything else, everything going on, Spygate.
So here, watch. If a sprinter in the Olympics gets caught doing steroids, right? They test positive for steroids. They get stripped of that medal, right?
Tour de France is vacant a couple of times.
Two years later, they go and run again, and they win, and they don't test positive. They get their gold medal. They're not forever stripped of winning again. I'm not saying if the Astros go back and win next year, they don't get it. But you were caught cheating in the World Series, period. How do you still have that? How can you still be considered the champ?
I could go off if Deflategate.
Let's use Brady since you brought up Brady. If Deflategate or Spygate was found that they had recorded the team in. Who's the team that they beat last? Let's use the Bucks. If they came out tomorrow and said, "Hey, we caught the Bucks recording the Chiefs. They recorded their practices, and Tom Brady had deflated the balls. We caught them." You think they're still the Super Bowl champs? Would you still call them the Super Bowl champs?
No.
How do you know?
Now I know I'm a Chief fan, but still, it's like if you saw something like that, the answer is no. So. There's one more trend that I actually hate in baseball, and it does go against analytics. It kind of goes like this. If you have a left-hand hitter, let's say he's on a tear. Let's say in the last three games or so, right, he's got two home runs. He's batting like .450. But then there's like a mediocre left-handed starting pitcher. Against the lefty? Oh, no, I got to sit him. You got to do that.
I got to interrupt you and ask you a question because I had this question because, you know, with analytics and baseball, how many teams have been true 100% bought in on analytics? Like Billy Bean, Oakland A bought in and won a World Series.
You know, there's actually been a lot of them. The thing I've realized though, is once you get to the playoffs, some of the analytics, some of it has to be pick and choose. I'll give you a good example. There was last year the Yankees tried to get cute. They tried to start Davey Garcia and then put in J-Hap from the bullpen, which, mind you, J-Hap at the bullpen, it hasn't been done for so many years. Basically, you want a starting pitcher going in later in the game, which is just not his cup of tea. And there's some times where I think they try and get too analytical and they get a taste of their own medicine and they just, well, they lose. Sometimes it's so hard in the postseason because I actually believe, like, imagine the team that, you know, they win four games, they advance to the World Series. And let's say the next team up wins in six or seven games. That rest does affect them coming into the World Series. Sure. A lot of teams start off cold. So as far as who is very analytical to a T and wins it all, the Dodgers are a very analytical team. They won all last year, but that's a Mickey Mouse year with a lot of.
Yeah, but hold on. There is a difference. When you say they're very analytical, I get it. I had this conversation with Coach, and I had Cynthia Freeland on. And obviously she's all about analytics. And we talked about, like, there needs to be a balance, right, between analytics and your eye test, right, and just what you know, right? There's professional people who do this for a living, like, that you need to understand. There's more to it than analytics because for every, you know, number that says do A, there's been exceptions to that rule, right? You're never finding an analytics as, well, this happens 100% of the time. Never. Just doesn't exist. So if that's the case, there needs to be that kind of balance, I think. So that's why when I say, was there, because I think back to the A's, right? They never actually won, right, with Billy Bean. They never actually won a World Series. So did it work to make them better?
Well, yes. There's a couple of things about that. And I actually just did a video. I got on the podcast. I do got on YouTube. And that was, is Moneyball accurate? And there was a couple of things that they didn't talk about. For example, they talked about free agency and trades for the most part. But what they didn't tell you is that one of the best third basemen in baseball was on that team. An MVP shortstop was on that team that they drafted. They had the Cy Young Award winner that was drafted on that team as well. So, and if you look at it, that guy that they acquired from the Yankees in David Justice, even though the Yankees was paying half of his salary, he was the second most paid guy on the team.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're talking about a guy that, you know, we're like, oh, well, I'm paying you half. And, you know, for a guy that's given a so-called the lowest budget in baseball, which also was not the case, why would you pay $3.5 million to somebody who's going to play what? He only played about 110 games that year, which during the early 2000s was not a lot. And the most paid guy on that roster was being paid $7 million that year, yeah, all from the Oakland A's. So when you go by Moneyball and you go by analytics, there's much more to it. And it was also a style of play, not just analytics, right, but there it goes by a certain thought process. So right, analytics or not, right? If you say, listen, man, you suck at hitting the curveball right now, I need you to step forward up in the box. To me, there's more of this. They want to make it all computerized, which to a point, yes. But if you look at film and if you just watch baseball, this also goes by coaching. Look at all the guys that led in walks. Look at the high, you know, on base percentages, and that's because of walks. So if you look at just what this team did and the way they were coached, I understand the analytical point of view, but there was much more to this team that unfortunately didn't win it all that year.
Yeah, fair
and
enough.
Typically, if you have an MVP and a Cy Young Award, you could say that's kind of a death sentence for not winning at all. Same thing with an MVP in football not making it to the Super Bowl. But this is the last one. Now, I know you got two kids.
I got to run, but yes, I'll give you one last one.
All right, so I'm kind of going because you're a Bears fan, your wife is a Bengals fan, and I've always wanted to listen to the banter between you two. So my father and I kind of made this decision when I was a kid of not being a Jet fan, and he was completely okay with it because of the suffering he's endured. So have your kids picked a football team or anything like that yet? Or are you going to do
– They have picked a team.
Okay, so did you let them go on their own path like I sort of did?
100%. We you know, Sundays, you know, for some people, Sundays is church. For us, Sundays is football. And, you know,
so
they.
What happened? I got to hear this.
So they came,
I don't think any of us know this. So no, we got to hear this.
This is the premiere of my. So I have 7-year-old twins, a boy and a girl.
Yes. Yes.
And they've watched football, and look, they've made their decisions based on, you know, certain animals that they like, certain colors that they like. And it's difficult to even say this. So my son has decided that he is going to be an Eagles fan.
No way.
Yeah.
Was this during the Super Bowl?
This was his first year as an Eagles fan. They won the Super Bowl. So,
oh!
Yeah. So he picked them before. So I'll give him credit.
Oh my goodness.
It paid off dividends early for him. Right. He got his jersey. He got all the stuff. He's happy. My daughter is just very much into horses. Like she's a horseback rider. So she's a Colts fan. So she could have gone Broncos. She went with the Colts. She liked the blue and the white, with the horseshoe. And she's a Colts fan. I'm hopeful that Carson Wentz has a good year for her, because it does bother her when they lose.
So did that trade cause a little banter between them?
They're not at that age yet.
I'm just saying, there's some that are, man. It's like a 5-year-old kid's like, what do you mean? I just bought a jersey and he's gone.
You know what? My son's jersey is interesting, because obviously, as I'm a Bears fan, he's got the Super Bowl, the darker, it's almost black, Super Bowl Foles jersey.
Wait, was that the one hanging up when I first saw the
display? Yes.
How did I I said, yeah. How'd you get the full? You're like, ah, well, I got it.
Yeah, that's that.
Wow. That's got to be a crazy house, man. So hold on. You got a Bears fan, a Bengals fan, a Colts fan, and an Eagles fan.
Yes, which is good. We got two AFC, two NFC. There's four opportunities for to win it all. Come in, or even listen. My wife and I always joke the likelihood of a Bears Bengals Super Bowl is we'd be I think luckier to win the lottery. But if you throw in the Colts and the Eagles, we might have a chance at having one of our teams face one of our other teams. We're just happy when, you know, the Bears and the Bengals play, which, you know, every 4 or 5 years. So,
you know, the last time me and my father thought about going to a Chief Jet game, there was something going on, family oriented, so we couldn't go. But it was also when they were having that shootout. Do you remember that a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Marcus Peters plays his last game as a Chief during that game, if you remember correctly, before getting traded. I think he got traded to the Rams. And then he eventually got traded to the Ravens.
Right. Okay, yes.
Yeah, I think his last game as a Chief was that game, and it was like 36 to 32, something like that. The Chiefs lost. That was the game we almost attended.
I'm just waiting for my daughter to realize. I'm not going to tell her. She'll figure it out one day, though, that the last time the Bears were in the Super Bowl was 2006, and we lost to her Colts. So hopefully.
Wait, she doesn't know about
that? She doesn't know that. She'll eventually – I'm hiding it from her because I'll never hear the end of it.
Wait. So you tell me it's got to be like the meme where the kid's blowing the trumpet in the girl's ear? Or the trombone, rather.
Listen, I can't let them. I'm gonna make sure they can't hear it. Listen, they still believe in Christmas, right? So they still got Santa Claus. So I think.
Hey, dude, I'm gonna.
That's gonna be my thing.
I believe in Christmas magic. Don't piss in my feet and tell me it's rain, Anthony.
Okay. Well, when she finds out about that, that's when I'll break the news to her and say, "Well, listen, the Colts beat my Bears in a Super Bowl. That should be good enough for you. That was Santa's last gift."
So before you go, man, I'm drinking a little champagne, just give myself a little bit of a weekend celebration because I had a miserable work week. So why don't you tell us what you represent, man?
Well, yes. Don't forget we got a couple of things, but let's since we're drinking, I see the nice drink there on the rocks. Don't forget to check out Gran Leyenda Tequila. Part owner and my co-host, Hugh Jackson. It's 100% organic. It's 100% black owned. And, from everyone, who's ever tried it, they'll tell you it goes down smooth. And it's one of the few beverages that is an upper. So there's actually some positive health benefits, when taken in moderation, of course. Gran Leyenda nice. Tequila.
And don't panic because it's organic.
Don't panic. It's organic. Exactly.
And I will say, I do got to get a bottle sometime. And I will say, I actually, for Kentucky Derby, did a bourbon sampler. And oh my God, you'd be surprised, like 12 different types. Some of them were gasoline. Some of them had vanilla. Some of them had honey.
Yeah.
Definitely a certain thing. But still, from what you're telling me, I need next special occasion.
Delicious. It's available in 48 states, so you can get it anywhere now. And it's good stuff.
So basically everywhere except Hawaii and Alaska, I presume?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Well, yeah, because it only involves water, right?
which is too bad. I really enjoy Hawaii, so we gotta figure out a way to get it down there too.
Eh, with time. So, Anthony, boss man, thank you. You always put on a great show.
Thank you, sir.
Every time that I talk to you, there always seems to be a good time. And I just love it, man. I really do. This is amazing. So I hope that I hope to have you on sometime soon in case another something comes up. Maybe it's more instant replay. If you didn't know, I made an article about my thoughts. I opened up the rule book too about it. I know we didn't get into that too much, but hopefully something will pop up and we will have a nice heated common debate.
Well, I'll tell you, I've got a new kind of daily rant coming out. It's YouTube exclusive, starting on Monday, May the 10th, I want to say. And so we've got instant replay. There's my piece on overtimes. We're talking about transgender athletes. We're talking about GOAT debates and why they're a waste of time to have. Like, just
especially in baseball.
There is, especially in baseball, there's just every day there's going to be something that drives me nuts, because apparently there's a lot. So those should be good. So after that instant replay one comes, we can definitely have that conversation. And when my Blue Jays are in the World Series, we'll definitely get together and talk about that.
They are my dark horse team still to win the World Series. But just remember, the baseball GOAT debate is pointless, because what do I tell people? Yogi Berra has 10. Not even the GOAT at his own position.
There you go.
And we'll end it off that. Nice. Everybody, this is Anthony K of Sports Fluent, my boss at Undrafted Sports, and this is Colin Strikes. We got more topics that'll come your way. I'm so happy to have this. And you guys, of course, are all the best. Have a good night, everybody.